Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
From Pee-wee to Dumbo and everything in between, join us every Thursday in April for Filmography Tim Burton. Our five-part season will break down all 19 of Burton's feature-length films to date in detail. Follow Filmography on Spotify or wherever else you find your podcasts.
I'm Leo Phillips, host of This Must Be the Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
My friendship to all of you precludes my involvement with any one of you. But if you wanna make love, then I do too, and I'll be right there behind you.
Constant listeners, and welcome yet again to The Losers Club, a Stephen King podcast from the Consequence Podcast Network. Boys, it's been a while.
It has been a while indeed.
Since we've had the gang together. Mike's been kind of overseeing many interviews, and you guys did a review.
We did a review.
The film. I wasn't there for it.
But you had your own review.
I wrote a page to screen for the AV Club about that. We posted it to the socials. Go check it out. My take was not very kind. I didn't love it, but I did. I would say my piece was fair. I talked about the potential of the twist.
So did we. I think we all talked about the potential.
And then if you want to hear me in podcast form, since I wasn't on the review episode, I swung over to our friends, the New Flesh podcast, who were on our Creepshow episode. We'd love them to have them back again someday. They're good dudes. Check that out. Me and Emma Stefanski from Thrillist chatted with Brett Arnold over there to talk about Pet Sematary Remake, and it wasn't a very diverse panel because none of us liked it.
Well, who are you?
Oh, shit. Wow, forgot to do that. You might know me as Rockin' Randall Colburn. Church Colburn.
Church Colburn?
Because that was my favorite character from the remake. Because I love that cat.
I love the cat.
So it's good to see you guys again. Yeah. It's been a while. And who's sitting across from me?
This is Michael. I'm not going to go. Michael Lisey Story Rothman?
Ooh.
Is it Lisey Story?
Lisey Story. It's Lisey Story.
Okay, so Michael Lisey Story Rothman. Editor-in-chief of Consequences of Sound.
And imagine it being Lisey Story, one word, like with no, just one long word.
Lisey Story, Lisey all story. Bunched together. Kind of, you know, maybe that's how they'll promote it. That'd be cool.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Judston Gerber. Not to our friend.
I like how we're still doing Pet Sematary.
He's a famous character.
Said that we're moving on.
He's a famous character. We can't let go.
That's true.
You can say maybe I dug up that joke.
I'm Fred Gwynburn.
Ooh.
Fred Gwynburn. Justin Gwynber.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I'm also a contributor here at Consequence of Sound and a co-host of the Halloweenies Freddy Krueger podcast for this season.
Be sure to subscribe to that. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. We saw that you guys, I actually popped into the reviews recently, and it was exciting. There was a lot of recent reviews, and some of them were very nice, and some of them weren't.
No, there was one that we got on Losers Club that was not so nice.
Oh. Very mean.
Very, very mean.
My heart.
You know, we don't pay enough credence to the 9 out of 10 would be very positive.
Oh, they're all usually
and we
positive.
Always like point out and single out the one jerk or the person that doesn't want to hear, like, the person that says something like, I don't like him either, but I don't want to hear about Trump. And like, oh, those are the best
about
ones.
Mr. T?
Yeah, Mr. T.
Mr. T.
Yeah,
it's... Get him out of here.
No, it's all good. We appreciate your feedback regardless, although we'd really like y'all to bump us up back to a 5.0 average instead of a 4.5. So please leave us a review. Please leave Halloweenies a review. And please leave your new Twilight Zone.
Oh, podcast. Yes, The Fifth Dimension, a Twilight Zone podcast. And that's been a fun adventure as well. We just recorded our third episode. It's going to be, it should be out already. So
nice.
Find it.
Check it out. Speaking of things that are going to happen on Friday, the day that this comes out, really quick before we get going, what do we think the new Star Wars is going to be called?
Oh, that's a good point. I think it's
trailer's coming out Friday.
Probably Judge Revenge.
Judge Revenge?
Yeah. No.
Oh, from.
I think the movie will be called Star Wars Galaxy Force.
Ah, I like this. They're going to drop Episode 9 and just call it Star Wars Galaxy Force.
What if they called it Star Wars Galaxy Edge just to promote the new theme park?
Oh,
and it has literally nothing to do
with it. Oh, is that what the theme park's called?
Yeah.
I think they should call it Star Wars Laser Blast.
Somebody said, I think it was A Final Hope, and I kind of like that idea. I like that title to be.
Oh, yeah, I was making fun of that in the thread.
I think they should call it Star Wars Episode 9, The Final Chapter.
I think it should be Star Wars Episode 9, Jason Lives.
Or how about Star Wars The Next Episode, like the old Dre track from 2000?
What if it was just called, like, Star Wars Episode 9, Chewbacca?
Chewbacca. Just...
And the story is the same. They do not single out Chewbacca in any way. He shows up just as much as he ever has.
I know, that's what I think is...
No hero funny. Moment.
You know, the sad thing is that all the fans would come around to it.
They'd be like, finally, this Wookiee gets his time.
Like, do you remember how odd and obscene Attack of the Clones that, you know, felt when it got announced? But we've come around to it. I mean, at least some people.
I don't think anybody's come around to Attack
of the Clones. Everybody
hates
that
movie. People still say, oh, you mean clones? Like, that's...
Oh, clones? Yeah, I love clones.
I love clones.
Oh, you mean Phantom?
Phantom. Guess who's going to be there? Who's currently there right now?
Ray Park?
Since this is coming out on Friday. Well, Ray Park might be there, but Mackenzie Gerber's there. So,
oh, yeah. Correspondent. Yeah. We've got a Losers Club correspondent. Maybe some King News will drop into Star Wars.
Yeah, they're going to be sharing. Well, they're not going to be on Apple.
JJ's though. Like, we're just going to show the first episode of Lisey's story, which we filmed an hour. Oh, I might be jumping the gun there.
We are jumping the gun a little bit.
Well, I guess in this sense, I think you should keep an eye on Mackenzie Gerber's tweets, because he might be tweeting from Star Wars Celebration. And we're also going to be talking about some tweets, but not Mackenzie's. Stephen King's. Welcome to Needful Tweets.
He's not a human being. Don't you see what he's done? Kill them all! Let God sort them out!
Well, we've got a month's worth of tweets.
Month's
I think the last time that we went over them, we're in Dan's room.
And just, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And so just a lot has happened.
Yeah.
And just to remind you all, we don't touch on every King tweet with Needful Tweets these days. We just kind of highlight some things.
Yeah.
And can I ask you if this March 10th tweet is real?
It's real.
So Stephen King is officially Dad Joke King.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, he's been doing it for years, but I'll kick this off. March 10th. It was Chuck Norris's birthday. King tweeted, "There is no theory of evolution, just a list of animals Chuck Norris allows to live. If you can see Chuck Norris sees you. If you don't see Chuck Norris, you may be seconds away from death." And so did he put that they were from the joke book?
Yes.
Because then in parentheses it says from the Chuck Norris jokes website.
Now, wait, I was trying to remember.
Is it actually a thing? www.chucknorrisjokes.com?
Well, I want to say it was what, 2004, 2005 when that was trending on the internet?
Yeah.
God, that's like such a long time ago.
That was around the time of John Kerry running for president.
That was. He was a really good candidate too.
Let's
well, that's
on.
The last that we're going to talk about politics.
It all goes to time. Barry Goldwater was around back then.
Justo, you want to take this next
This next section, The Stamp of King.
Ah, the stamp. Anyway,
this is the longest section for
he's
sure.
He's repping some books here.
Yeah, this is all his approvals.
I thought this was all Postal Service related.
Oh, I wish.
March 4th. By the way, my Tesla is currently getting 22,000 miles to the gallon. Mechanical problems? Zero.
Is that
and then
a joke?
Somebody, no, he's just happy about it.
No, he's just happy.
And then somebody replied, "And how much coal is burned to make this green miracle move?"
What an asshole.
I know.
I would love to find out that douchebag's name. Then Stephen King responded.
I think it was Donald Trump.
Oh, Donald Trump Jr.
It was Eric Trump trolling Stephen King.
We won't actually mention Trump tweets, but we will mention Trump during this segment. And then King responded, "I get the juice that powers my Tesla from solar. Let me amend that. We get a credit from Central Maine Power because we sell them solar. It's not a huge deal. But it's a start." Why do we share this
I know.
Tweet?
I just thought it was a fun opportunity to talk about his Tesla, which is, I believe, No, no, I was thinking of a Prius. That's what Larry David drives. Never mind.
You want to do this next one, Mike?
Yeah, sure. March 7th, he retweeted Ethan J. King. So he's given him a little stamp. And Ethan wrote, I think everyone should have the experience of barricading yourself in a room to write something with a headline, with a deadline approaching. There's something fun about it, even though the concept is stressful. So it's like a little more on writing for King. That's
all
bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Same day, he quoted Darren Franek of Entertainment Weekly. I wonder how he knows him.
Yeah.
Mr. Entertainment Weekly over here. The Good Fight returns on March 14th. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
The new season is indescribably wonderful. So let me try to describe it. And then King said, of course, it's the best show on TV.
What about the Passage? The Passage is number two. I hear this, that The Good Fight's great. I never watched The Good Wife, but these are actually supposed to be good shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard it's good.
And it's on CBS All Access as well. So
that's true. And I'm in the Twilight Zone, so there you go. See. You want to take March 10th?
I will. Long time, this is me saying this, long time Entertainment Weekly critic, but I don't know where he works now. Owen Gleiberman is both right and wrong. As someone who grew up far from anything resembling an art house, I can tell you that Netflix has been a great thing. You guys in the big cities get everything. I was stuck with Police Academy 3. And then, I'm getting response from people who liked Police Academy 3. You guys are going to love Police Academy meets the Children of the Corn.
That's not bad.
I liked the Police Academy movies when I was growing up. I started watching the first one about a year ago, which is a rewatch.
Doesn't hold up.
They don't.
Woo!
Surprise!
Talk about some thinking.
The flood of Police Academy 3 defenders in Stephen King's.
Ding 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 ding! The notifications keep dinging.
Like, what a fucking sad life. Sorry, that was mean.
And by the way, it's Police Academy 3 back in training. I believe.
Probably didn't
is
have
that what it
characters
is? Is Gutenberg in that one, or did he?
He
leave?
Sure is. He's in the first four, Mike.
Oh wow.
I prefer post Gutenberg.
I'm goot splaining over here.
You can have a Police Academy pod.
Love to dissect that. It'd be me and like five women just talking about the problems of Police Academy.
And you could spin that off and talk about Porky's. So you know,
I bet you Police Academy is more problematic than Porky's at this point. I'm not kidding.
Oh,
you won't believe the stuff they do in this movie. Even I had to turn it off.
Oh my god,
I watch anything.
Mike, next one.
On March 10th, he retweeted Tanana Reeve Du, which she had shared an article about The Passage, which is her article is Why Fox's Biting Vampire Drama Thrives Thanks to Working Moms. So he's still repping The Passage.
Well, two things here. One, since he's retweeting her, that means he's seen that we interviewed her.
He might have.
So he needs to get on the pod.
We're one step closer.
That's the step I'm taking with that.
Yeah.
He knows we exist. And do listen to our episode with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's a few episodes back. It was very good. And I read this article about this because I was like, wait a minute, somebody's saying good things about The Passage. And I'll say this, they aren't really. It was more of an article where it seemed just more about the idea of having working moms in the writing room for a show, which is cool.
Yeah.
And it was like kind of an argument for why that's okay and why that's rare in Hollywood. A lot of working moms like have been shit on by, you know, Hollywood in that sense. Mm. And so it's an interesting piece in that regard. But I don't think anybody would agree the biting vampire drama is thriving.
Yeah. I haven't heard much about it other than from King.
I think the show bites, to be honest.
Awful.
Once bitten.
Which also bites.
March 11th, he quoted the great Bev Vincent. He said, I just finished season two. Wait, what is he talking about?
Well, Bev Vincent wrote.
Oh, Bordertown.
Yeah.
He wrote, okay, so Bev Vincent said, I just finished season two, so I'm glad to hear this. Series three of Bordertown now filming in Finland. And King said, I have to get me some of this.
What is Bordertown?
Probably another fucking Don Winslow thing.
I wish. No Winslow quotes. No. Although I am reading The Power of the Dog at this moment in time, and I'll have to say,
very good,
very good.
Oh, awesome.
Justo.
Okay, so let me read this tweet from March 22nd. It's a retweet of a Mini Driver tweet.
Ah, Good Will Hunting.
Small Driver.
Gross Point Blank.
Big Driver.
Who would win, Baby Driver versus Mini Driver?
I think
depends
the Big Driver.
It depends
would
on
win.
What Mini Driver's driving. Mini Driver wrote, "I just met an influencer. What do you influence?" I asked her. "I influenced your decision about which handbag to buy." I said, "I have handbags older than you." She said, "Great, I'll tell you which bags are worth the most and you can make some money. I am now in a bar." Pretty funny.
Ooh.
Now, what's strange is, and I'm not joking, today, Mini Driver randomly replied to something I tweeted out a couple months ago.
What?
Is this insane? Keep vamping
here. How the hell did that happen? Okay.
Well, a couple months ago, I tweeted out how much, I think I wrote, Return of Me came out in the year 2000.
Oh, yes.
Therefore making it the most underrated movie of the century.
I remember that.
I love Return to Me.
Mm-hmm.
Never and so she liked it and retweeted it a couple months ago. Okay. But my God, today she decided to respond to it. So this I tweeted this out in November of last year.
My God, yeah, it was a while ago.
What are
ago.
The chances of this?
Yeah.
So then she finally wrote, this is an exciting podcast. Oh, she wrote, I feel like it's so beloved by those who saw it that love mitigates its underratedness. And then she wrote sick as in S-I-C, like it's not an actual word.
So
wow. She agrees. And
people tag her in the post?
Did I tag her in the post? I must have tagged her in the post.
Yeah, no, you had
I tagged her and David Duchovny. And
Duchovny loves that movie.
You thirsty little bitch.
Yeah. Hey, you she got responded that, and you got that retweet. I got 141 likes and a bunch of retweets.
That's impressive.
I've got 2,000 followers now.
Holy shit.
I'm kidding. But a lot of people seem to agree with me. I just thought that was really strange timing that we would be talking about Mini Driver tweet and she would respond.
I will say, out of all the questions that I asked Duchovny in the what was it, the 10 years interview that we did for Consequence of Sound last year when he released his second album, he responded the most to the Return to Me question.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Because he were wondering where Bonnie Hunt's been. So
I love Bonnie Hunt.
You know,
she wrote and directed and started.
Yeah.
Wow.
That sounds like a good date night for you and Jen.
Yeah.
All right.
I think so.
I think I'll try to show her Devil's Rejects again. Didn't go over so well.
Follow
the first
it up
time.
With 31.
You know what's fun? I just realized that all of us are going to go see the midnight screening of Three from Hell this year.
Yes.
Look,
absolutely.
We're in this Dracula and we're riding it till the end. Mike, do you want to grab the next one?
Yeah, totally. So on April 3rd, he wrote, I'm reading Kari Mara. The new novel by Thomas Harris comes out next month. He's as good as ever. Reading his prose is like running a slow hand down cold silk.
It's like Hannibal Lecter reading
well,
a tweet.
Hey,
running an Eric Clapton down cold silk.
An Eric Clapton. Okay, slow hand.
That joke was a slow burn.
Oh, man, I love it.
I'll tell you what. I don't
know if I'm
looking
forward
to this.
Thomas Harris is writing books.
Yeah, well, it's a fiction book, too, but I read the plot.
Mm-hmm.
This reads like Da Vinci Code.
Is it Hannibal?
I'm not kidding. It sounds pretty bad.
Is Hannibal?
No, it's not Hannibal. Well, if that's a twist, like Hannibal is.
I hope it is. I hope Clarice comes out.
It's him caught up in a Da Vinci Code type situation, and he's the hero.
Kari Mara is an anagram for Hannibal.
Ah, good point.
I just love it if he pops up at like the, you know,
you
the
found
very
me.
End. Oh, I'm Barney.
I'm the mythical Kari Mara.
April 4th. Pet Sematary opens tonight. They don't come back the same. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Ooh. Oh, man.
Justo.
Rockin' Randall Colburn over here.
Roarin' Randall.
A mere 19 hours ago. As of this recording.
Yeah.
Cemetery Row by Greg Iles. Pure reading pleasure. This guy knows the Deep South as well or better than any other novelist. He's talked about this author before, and I've also heard great things about this author. He's got a series of books that take place, as I just mentioned, in the Deep South.
Well, hey, I would love to read anything, but hey, I'm stuck in King's Dominion for at least the next 5 years. So
hey,
I got the David Lynch memoir that I read about like 150 pages of last year and couldn't finish it in time. So
what can I tell you?
Molly Watch.
I love Molly Watch. Woof woof. March 29th, he wrote, I took Molly, a.k.a. the Thing of Evil, to an advanced screening of Pet Sematary. She didn't come back the same. And there's a photo of Church that he photoshopped Molly's face on. And
cute.
I would love it to just watch him do this on his computer.
Hey, Tabby, look what I did.
He's working on his laptop from like maybe like a bar, like the bar stool, like in his kitchen or something. And they're like,
what are the odds that he did this?
I would love it. I hope that he did it.
And like not like an assistant or a family member. Like, what are the odds that he actually sat?
I think
sat
he did do it because it looks really shitty. And I think it was just like, look what I did. I did a thing on the computer.
And I would love it if he used the same thing I use, which is online photo editor. And now they have it's called the Pixlr X or whatever. That's what I used for the Lisi story feature image that I did with Julianne Moore. I use it every day, and hopefully King does too.
Do me a favor, seriously. Send me that. Is it a link or what is it? Is it software? What's going on?
Yeah, you want to use it?
Yeah, I'll use it. I'll have some fun times with that.
It's an easy to use Adobe Photoshop. And we're not at all sponsored by this, but we should be.
Get some money from
Thank you very much, Dolby.
Yeah.
Deep Thoughts by Stephen King. Mm. March 8th. Geekdom at its very best. What do you think of the theory that the mountain kaiju is actually Rakdmotul? This question may keep me awake at night.
If only we had Dan.
Wait, what?
I don't know what any of this
if
is.
We only had Dan.
What does this mean?
Dan knows all about the kaiju.
Is this a Godzilla thing?
I think so.
A mountain kaiju.
Well, let's move on.
Moving on.
I'm sure we got some listeners screaming at the phone.
Yeah, right.
And also, Police Academy 3 is unbelievable.
Yeah. And also, Donald Trump is a good president.
He's a wonderful president. March 10th. I don't like Trump, but I wish you guys would stop talking about him. March 10th. Wondering how many prescription drugs hawked on TV have suicidal thoughts and or ideations in their list of possible side effects. Probably all of them.
All of them.
Yeah. Be careful out there, Kivitz. Be careful.
March 25th.
According to my 365 facts that will scare the shit out of you daily calendar, Slumber Party Barbie once came with a book titled How to Lose Weight. The visible text reads, "Don't eat."
Oh my God. Is that real?
I don't know.
That's surprised.
That does sound like a 1959 model or something. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Don't ask me. I'm just a girl.
Okay, actually, I want to do this one because I have a little venom with this.
Ooh, so, venom! A great movie.
A great movie. I was supposed to watch that on an airplane, and the stream didn't work, and everyone around me was watching.
Tom Hardy
is
amazing.
I'm dying to watch
Disaster Zone.
So March 26, he wrote, "How about a movie where Mary Poppins turns out to be a serial killer? Think how exciting that would be. The umbrella could have like a machete inside." Now, two notes about this. This sounds as if he is literally laying on his couch, stoned out of his fucking mind, and he's just thought about Mary Poppins. It's that one last line. The umbrella could have, like, a machete inside. Now, I saw this the second it was posted, and I immediately replied to him with the Scary Mary trailer, because I was a huge fan of those fake trailers when they first came out.
I was going to mention that.
And so the fact that he then replied back saying, he retweeted Daisy No Nazi Steiner. I guess I just need to be expressly liberal in my usernames.
I have a feeling this person would love our podcast.
Yeah, he probably would. That's true. He tweeted, "Someone had the idea before me, even made a trailer, Scary Mary." Now, Stephen, I know you don't listen to this podcast. Maybe you do, but I replied to you with this. So it makes me
think. You're verified.
I am verified.
That means he sees
it. So he had to have seen it.
Do you want the rest of my Gatorade?
No Nazis?
No Nazis.
Because you seem pretty thirsty over there.
I know. I am thirsty. I just want, because here's the thing. I've been asking him two questions. One, I asked him what he thinks about Major League because there's actually a connection there.
He probably
there
hates you.
He probably does hate me. And we keep asking him about the mask. And I just want him to know.
We have not asked about the mask in over a year.
We got to do it again then.
I will.
All right.
I promise.
Well, all right. That's our guarantee going out of an Needful Tweet.
That's the LCG, the Loose Club Guarantee.
The Loose Club Guarantee. And just as we do in every Needful Tweets episode, we guarantee you a trip to Hollywood. And that's where we're going. We're going to Hollywood King.
There's a town on the Costa del Sol. Always find my way there. There's a place that they calls to my soul. Always find my way there. People there are forever young, and they toast to each other's love each and every night.
Oh God, it is so sunny here, and we have to stay outside for a very long time because we have so many fucking
headlights. Wish I had prescription sunglasses because I feel like the sun's going to burn my retinas right off.
Oh my God.
Well, I'll kick things off here. The Talisman's Tale. Hey, I've heard of that. For decades, Steven Spielberg has tried adapting Stephen King's The Talisman, and he's come close in recent years. We talked about this a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
27 was that 2017?
Yeah.
God, how long have we been doing this?
Well, Josh Boone was hot at the time.
He still is. Very good-looking man. In 2017, he even tapped Josh Poon.
Poon.
Oh, Lord. What time is it?
I'm derailing this. To have Josh Boone to pen the screenplay, which led everyone to believe the fantasy novel might actually be a reality. It will be, though Spielberg won't be at the camera and Boone won't be at the typewriter either. According to Collider, his own Amblin imprint has hired The Handmaid's Tale director Mike Baker to helm the project from a screenplay by Buried's Chris Sparling. That is a weird combo of
yes,
people.
Yes, especially since Buried takes place entirely in a box and this movie is supposed to take place in this sprawling world.
Across the entire country. Yeah.
I liked Buried when I saw it. But yeah, that's just weird. I mean, has he written anything else of note?
I don't know. I can speak on behalf of Mike Baker, who did direct a lot of Handmaid's Tale episodes.
Yeah.
The show is an absolute dour. It's heading down the road to disaster. I'll say that much about the show. But I will say,
do you still watch it?
It does look really good. Yeah, of course. At this point, I'm in it to the end, which should have ended
you're in
about
the Dracula
halfway through the second season.
Would you call The Handmaid's Tale the Walking Dead of dramas right now?
I'm no, not there yet because the performances are good. And there's still a storytelling technique involved.
It's only two seasons in.
Yeah, it's only two seasons.
And the first season was really good.
I'll put it this way. The book ends when the first season ends. It's one of those situations.
Well, you know, Margaret Atwood's got a sequel to the book coming out.
Well, that's good that she finished it before the second season. So,
well, this is going to be years
later. This is actually
later.
The third season.
This is
truly going to be a sequel to the book, it sounds like.
Yeah. Interesting. So, yeah, I think it's weird. It's not, I don't think it bodes well. I mean, maybe Mike Baker will be great, but it's just kind of like, it just sounds like they went from the A team to the B team, or more so the C team. And although I don't know if we can say Josh Boone is A team because the guy never releases movies.
It's true. And we haven't seen much, from outside of Fall of the Stars, right? Like that was it.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, he's obviously doing The Stand.
Yeah. He's doing
that's
the Stand
big thing.
Now.
Yeah. So. But then New Mutants is going to come out. They confirm that, which is nice.
2 years later.
I know.
It's being dumped though, right?
I mean,
sounds like it might be a VOD situation.
Well, they said at CinemaCon that it's definitely coming out. So they made it sound like it might be a theater release, but
I like Maisie Williams' response. She's like, I don't know when it's fucking coming out.
She said they hadn't even done reshoots yet. And that was like a couple weeks ago. And so I don't know. They got to get on that.
Well,
and
it's reached a point now where the entire franchise is expired. So what's the point?
I know. Like, I mean, well, this could be the beginning of a new direction for the franchise. And I mean, the thing is, I still think it could be cool.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to keep my hopes up about it because I love the idea of it. Yeah. And yeah. So, but I mean, all this stuff, and Boone must be the most frustrated dude. Because
I imagine
he's doing so much work, and it feels like nothing is happening.
Well, hey,
and
he finally got his wish, so
he's doing
the
stand, and it's going to happen. Yeah. So we'll see how it turns out, but yeah. So anyways,
I wanted to say I would much rather see The Talisman at this point on Hulu or something.
Yeah
I think
that's something we can discuss like after all these headlines is
yeah we'll do that. We'll save that. Yeah, you're right.
But one of the things that I think is disappointing about this is that, you know, if this was a passion project for Spielberg and he opted out of that for this random West Side Story remake,
yeah, it's weird.
That makes me think even less of the guy at this point.
Well, he was never going to direct it, though.
He wanted to do it for a couple of years, though.
He was always going to produce it. He was never on board to direct it. So
I really don't understand his mentality for, like,
I don't think he should be doing West Side Story anyway.
Well,
I mean,
nobody
I don't know what
should be doing it.
It's such a lose-lose situation.
Well, it's kind of like the idea of, like, if someone came up with this theory that they should do a prequel of Grease or something.
What monster would think of that?
Yeah. Christ.
So, should we move on?
Yes, let's move on.
The Gunslinger Man in Black.
Again!
Amazon has tapped both Sam Strike from Mind Flayers and Jasper Pekkanen. I might have been right on that, by the way.
I think
the pronunciation.
That's actually pretty good.
He was one of the scumbags in Black Klansman. For their forthcoming series being developed by Glenn Mazura from The Walking Dead and The Shield. Strike will play Roland Deschain, a.k.a. the Gunslinger, who will follow Perkanen's Man in Black. For a while, the project was thought to be lost to Midworld, seeing how there hadn't been any movement since last April, when a since-deleted tweet confirmed that Amazon was still green on the show.
Ooh, I remember hopping on that.
Yeah.
Oh, we were excited. Now, however, it appears that there are still other worlds than these.
Clever.
Literally, in fact, as Variety's sources indicated, this new series will be complete reboot, separate from the theatrical film, as initially reported, and more aligned with the books. Now, if you heard that rumble just now, that's the fan base screaming in applause.
Yeah, so you don't have to read the next part.
I was copying and pasting my articles. It's too bad that this all just goes back. It's too bad Elba didn't get a better shot with that movie, but it was inevitable that they were going to distance themselves as much as possible from that disaster zone of a movie. But What are you going
to do? Yeah, I'm curious about these actors. I don't know anything about them. I mean, I saw Black Klansman, but I don't remember this guy.
Well, he's great in Black Klansman.
Yeah, he really is good in Black Klansman.
And he's terrifying in it. Because he's the one that puts Adam Driver in the basement.
We heard rumors
Nobody
for a while
puts
now.
Baby in a corner.
No, he puts Adam Driver in the basement. We heard rumors for a while that this is going to harken back to like the Wizard and Glass type storyline with a younger Roland, which I think is probably the right thing to do anyway. So I feel we've just talked about this so much over the last couple of years. I don't even know what else to add, even though this is actual news.
The thing is that I will say is that I feel like they need to cast an older gunslinger as well.
In the future?
Yeah, because I feel like you have to start off with that image of them still chasing each other in the desert without having to start off from the very beginning.
Oh, I just got a Twitter alert.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, what happened?
Mini Driver is reporting that... Nick Nolte will be playing old Roland.
Oh my God.
Oh, so this is exciting.
Me. It'll be him in the Hawaiian shirt with the crazy hair from his mugshot.
Your fucking name. Your name's Jake.
I lost him.
Jake on my basketball team.
Rips his tooth out for your
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we've talked so much about this. It's interesting to see some actual movement here, but the details are still really scarce, so we don't know where it's going to go. So, I mean,
I think there'll be a bigger press release in our near future.
And Amazon still hasn't like formally announced anything.
Right. Yeah, that's what I thought was really striking was the casting news came before anything had really been announced. I mean, it's one of those where there's been so many like hints that have dropped that it's happening, but there's still been no official confirmation.
Well, you've read all these books, so you should probably take this next story.
Nope.
Monsieur Mercedes, three mogul vroom vroom. I just all bore out there.
Oh,
Mr. Mercedes
nice.
Has
Very
added
nice.
Three recurring guest stars to the upcoming third season on the AT&T Audience Network. Kate Mulgrew. I feel like I know that name.
She was the captain on Star Trek Voyager.
No, I don't watch
And she was the cook in Orange is the New Black.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Red.
I know her. She'll play Alma Lane, a lifelong resident of Bridgeton, Ohio. As somebody who's read the books, I don't remember that character. Brett Gelman is Roland. Brett Gelman.
Love Gelman.
He's playing Roland Deschain. Roland Finkelstein.
I see what they did there.
What if Roland?
A passionate defense attorney working with the character of Lou, who's played by Brita Wool, is very talented in her murder trial.
Spoiler alert.
That's totally new.
Oh, okay. Well, they got to make a series, I guess.
Yeah, like Lou's character is I feel like they realized they had a really good actress in that role, and they kind of beefed up her role a little bit because Lou's good in the book, but yeah, they've been giving her a lot more in the series, which is good because she's great.
I promise to finish the first and second season. I promise this will happen.
Thank you.
It's just
Thank
an issue of
promise.
I need to get this. It's only on the Audience Network, right?
Get ready to really get confused in about a year when there's like multiple streaming networks and you have to juggle them left and right.
Listen, I know there's some big rep out there from the Audience Network. Can you give us a screener? We'll be happy to talk about the show. What's going on?
I'm still trying to get screeners for Cobra Kai, and YouTube's press people are like the most elusive people.
We're getting screeners from these other major networks and studios.
I know.
We can't.
I know.
What are you doing over there, DirecTV?
They're busy dealing with white nationalism.
wait, what? Oh, YouTube.
YouTube.
Oh, yeah, true.
Okay. Good.
And Natalie Paul will play Sarah Pace, a prosecutor on Lou's case. So it's the Lou Show, season 3. Which I'm
Natalie
fine
Paul
with.
Sounds familiar. Hold on.
We're going to take a look at Natalie Paul on
IMDb.com. Breaking news, Natalie Paul.
Mini Driver reports, Natalie Paul, very talented actress.
Natalie Paul will be working with Nick Nolte. I don't... Oh, no. Oh, she was on The Deuce, Randall. Season 3. She was... What's
yep,
the girlfriend?
Her.
Yeah.
Did you say season 3 of The Deuce? It doesn't even come out
Or
yet.
Season 2.
Okay.
She'll probably be in season 3 also.
I like the first season of The Deuce. It took me a year and a half to finish it. And
it's very good.
The second season
good.
Will probably take another year and a half.
I like season 2.
So this is going to be following Finders Keepers. So I haven't read that one. And did you say that was a good one? Or
I like Finders Keepers.
Okay. I liked it too.
But the way they did the series was... I haven't finished the second season, but... They kind of were telling the story from the third book because they're more directly related.
And that's End of Watch?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I think they haven't mentioned, I don't think, whether or not the third season is going to be about the second book because all the characters that have been announced here are all fabricated for this Lou storyline, which sounds cool.
Well, I hope the fourth season's Cujo.
Better be.
They just,
like, what if it turns into an anthology series?
What if it's just a pair? It's just a description of Cujo.
Yeah.
Donna Treadway goes to a nearby. It's like the whole thing is just a breakdown.
Okay.
Well, okay, Mike, you want to take this next
Return
one?
To Castle Rock, but also Salem's Lot and Misery.
Oh, this is huge news.
Oof, this is a big one, and I'm probably going to spiral down to a huge discussion from it. But we've known this for months now, but Hulu's Castle Rock was going to return. We didn't know when, and we didn't know how. Now we have all the details, and once again, showrunners Sam Shaw and Dustin Thomason have found a new story to tell within the world of Stephen King. Yes, the second season is going to go and follow Misery villain Annie Wilkes as she stumbles into the titular town where a warring feud is going down involving the legendary Merrill family and a fragile piece of land that happens to cut into Salem's Lot. As expected, the second season features another A-list cast in Lizzie Kaplan as Wilkes, Tim Robbins as Reginald Pop Merrill,
double woo,
Garrett Hedlund, former Kirsten Dunst boyfriend, as John Ace Merrill.
I like that casting, though.
Yeah. Elsie Fisher from 8th grade, who's wonderful, as Wilkes' homeschooled teenage daughter Joy, Yusra Warsama as Dr. Nadia Omar in nearby Salem's Lot, and Barkad Abdi as Omar's brother Abdi.
No.
Okay.
As himself.
And then Nathan.
As Captain Phillips star.
Yeah.
An Oscar nominee.
And Matthew Allen as Ace's brother, Chris. There's no release date yet. I don't know if this is going to come out in 2019. They were trying to, but it's probably going to be 2020.
It's got to be like, I'll say spring 2020 sounds about right.
Yeah.
First reaction when you heard this news.
What are they doing?
Yeah.
My reaction was, this sounds, first of all, it sounds like two seasons in one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the big pull will be Annie Wilkes because that's just the most famous in terms of popular culture. But I'm much more interested in just if it was just bared down to the Merrill Salem's Lot storyline.
I wish that Annie wasn't a part of it.
Yeah.
No. I mean, obviously, we're going to watch it. We'll be open-minded. But this just literally struck me as fan fiction. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I was almost excited at first because you know, just like the parts of your brain, they hear certain things.
And Lizzie Kaplan's a great actress.
Yeah. Love Lizzie
but
Kaplan.
I hear like Misery and I hear Salem's Lot and I hear the Merrills.
The
all
Sundog.
That. It's all these stories though that I love and these characters that I love, but then I'm just like, wait, together? Like, and it just really struck me as like, how can we bring together as much King shit as possible?
Also,
and
Annie Wilkes has no reason to be anywhere near this.
Well, so they're like, rewriting her history
for
this story, which is very bizarre. Yeah. And honestly, Lizzie Kaplan is a very good actress. That's not young Annie.
No.
Like, I don't want to be a dick, but it's just like she's like a supermodel. It's like you can't cast that as Annie. Like, part of Annie's thing is that she is a normal everyday woman who doesn't have anything else. Mm-hmm. And she's lonely as hell. And she's like, you know, the kind of person that doesn't, I don't know. It's like she is such a formidable, shapeless presence in the book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it just struck me as very strange casting. I'm excited for it. I love her as an actress.
This just seems to be more in line with that button ending.
Yeah.
The Jackie Torrance
than
ending.
Anything else in the first season. Because what I loved about that first season is that really Pangborn was the only tie to the past other than the illusions that they talk about in the town and whatnot. And, you know, the Dodd residence and the mentions of all the other past events and stuff. But that's what I loved about it. It's set in modern day, so you could get removed from all the source material, but still build upon that source material. But this is like going back in the past, and it's fucking confusing. And or maybe they're not even going back in the past, and they're just assuming that Annie Wilkes was, it's modern day, and yeah.
I think
younger.
One of these press releases mentioned it was the 70s or 80s.
Okay.
I want to say. But regardless, this also seems like a case of be careful what you wish for, because I do feel there were a lot of people, even a lot of our listeners were upset that it didn't lean more heavily into the King lore. And now you're going to get it, but you're going to get a lot of it. So,
and I remember a lot of the thing we talked about when we were, before the series kind of soured for us, was it felt like King, even though it wasn't King.
Yes.
Like the story beats felt familiar. The world felt familiar. The characters felt familiar, even if they weren't exactly those characters. That's what I really liked about that first season of that. And I think that's why I had such a negative reaction to this, because I'm just like, this feels like fan fiction. It feels like you're just roping people into the same place so you can put them all in the same room together.
Well, I'm wondering if that's from coming down from somewhere else, that they're like, look, you need to go further down.
It's
got to
be like, this has got to be memeable or something.
Again, this cast is just outright amazing. And Tim Robbins coming back to Stephen King, obviously.
Which is kind of confusing considering the fact that this does take place in the world of Shawshank, which they've
already just but, I don't know. I'm fine with that. I doubt you'll see Shawshank that much in this series.
But I will say that Yeah, in terms of the Merrill family, like Ace Merrill is one of my top characters and top three in the entire universe. Pop Merrill's a fascinating character. We don't see him too much, but he's one of the leads in The Sundog, which is a decent story, but he's a good character. And I don't know. I'm intrigued by what they're doing with Jerusalem's Lot. Like, is this a post-vampire town? Are you even going to touch on the vampires in it? Like, and then I also just wonder because, you know, Ace Merrill's a major character. This is going to be a younger version of Ace. I think, like, probably in his late 20s, early 30s.
This sounds to me, in terms of just the publications of Stephen King's works, that this if this takes place in the late 60s, then this would be before Salem's Lot Turns to Hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they I guess.
Go, because, you know, obviously if Ace is in his 20s and he was in his teens in the late 50s, that would stand the reason.
Yeah. And then, so this would be before Needful Things, which Ace is a big part of. So I don't know. It's just like, I'm intrigued. I like the casting. I like Garrett Hedlund. Is that because Garrett Hedlund to me is not a very good actor, but he's so striking. Like, I remember in, the best use of him I remember was in Llewyn Davis.
I was going to say, and I could see him as Ace just doing
same.
That.
Yeah, I think he'll be great as that.
Yeah, like, and you need that look, you need that, like, charisma, you need that sort of bad boy quality, and that's what Garrett Hedlund has, like, more than, like, almost any other sort of, like, modern actor. He's not going to win any awards, but he's always very striking.
What if Sam Shaw and Dustin Thomas were like, we saw Tron Legacy. And we realized we had to have Garrett Hedlund.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still optimistic that it'll be interesting. Because, I mean, look, that episode 7, The Queen, was still just phenomenal. Yeah, just phenomenal television. You know, you still have those minds that are making this. So I'm sure there's going to be some great TV that's up ahead.
If this was the first season and we didn't know what these guys were capable of, I'd be even more wary. But, I'm willing to be a little more optimistic than I usually am when it comes to these things.
It's just the Wilkes inclusion.
I agree. Nuts. I agree. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see.
There's literally nothing we can do.
It is. That's the thing.
Guys, get in touch with us.
Let's send him a tweet.
This.
Tell him we're on. Can you guys write Annie out of the show?
Please.
Let's move on. Justo?
Sure. There we go. Creep Show adds some creeps.
Ooh. Rude.
Rude.
You're rude.
Bunch of jerks. Shudder is keeping things in the family for its forthcoming TV series adaptation of Stephen King and George A. Romero's Creepshow. Today, they've let loose some very exciting details that should no doubt please many constant readers in King's Dominion.
Now, it should be noted that I've copied and pasted these articles strictly from Consequence of Sound, so
I memorized it.
Yeah.
I'm not reading anything right now.
Yeah, right?
excuse me, let me get back to where I was. First up, it's been announced that showrunner Greg Nicotero will adapt King's harrowing Night Shift short story, Grey Matter, which is something we did not know about.
No.
We were talking about this the last time. And that, of course, tells an icy tale involving a troubled son, his alcoholic father, and a deadly case of beer.
Brewskis.
Pass me a brew, bro. Things get messy, to say the least.
I love how you're just reading it word for word.
I'm hyping everything. But that's not all. The episode will feature the one and only Adrian Barbeau. Love Adrian Barbeau, who returns to the franchise over three decades after she starred in the 1982 original. Of course, she went toe-to-toe with Fluffy, and arguably that movie's strongest chapter, The Crate.
I think we put that as number one in our
I love The Crate ranking.
Terrific stuff. Mm-hmm. Gets even better, folks. Joining Barbeau for what will assuredly be a slimy ride are two other stars. You ready for this?
Bring it. Why am I ready? I've literally got it in front of me.
Yeah, I know. But
are the listeners ready?
Go for it.
Breaking Bad's Giancarlo Esposito.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Hello.
Gus.
And Saw's Tobin Bell.
I think you mean Better Call Saul's Giancarlo.
Of course.
That's true.
Incredible. I don't know what's going to happen next on that show.
Saw's Tobin Bell, I'm actually excited about because I like him a lot.
Tobin, obviously, with a resume of playing iconic villains and will be an easy fit into the Creepshow lore.
I will say Tobin Bell's favorite role for me still is Seinfeld.
He's so good in that.
Oh, isn't he the guy who sells the
pawn shop,
the sweaters, whatever?
I feel like Tobin Bell's like, I've seen him in a few kind of offbeat comedies, like since the Saw movies. I feel like he's, you know, he made so much money on the Saw movies probably that he can kind of just chill a little bit. And he's taken some really kind of strange offbeat roles and it's been fun. But the thing is, he goes way back. Like before he was, you know, Jigsaw, he was
in X-Files too.
Well, yeah, he was in stuff throughout the 80s, probably the 70s too. Like he did a random roles on AV Club. Club, and it was really good.
I hear he's actually playing Old Roland in the Amazon Stark Tower
series.
But if
you want to talk about, like, if I think of Gray Matter and, like, the old drunks sort of in
the bar,
Tobinville's a great look for it, and I think Giancarlo is, too.
Like, I agree.
Those are two, I think that's really great casting. I don't know, who's Adrienne Barbeau?
I don't know. Maybe she works at the bar.
Maybe she's the drunk dad.
I'm not sure who she's playing, but I bet she got some quotes from her right here.
Her quotes were so boring.
Well, let's let the listeners be the judge of that. Rockin' Randall coming in hot. Miss Barbeau says, "Oh, so as I said,
just read the fucking quote."
I was thrilled when Greg asked me to join the Creepshow world once again, and then working with Tobin and Giancarlo, with Greg as our director. Well, that was the icing on the cake. No, not that cake. Oh, you know what I mean. That's a
pretty good bit.
I have to report many press releases. I know you're with me on this, Mike. And the quotes are always just like, working with these people, what a dream.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of dreams, showrunner Greg Nicotero had this to say. I feel I'm in great company getting the opportunity to direct a story written by Steve. Steve? Between Salem's Lot, Pet Cemetery, and The Stand. Oh, wow. Real original. I've always found his stories rich and relatable, characters forced into supernatural situations beyond their control, the everyday person's primal fears. To visualize Gray Matter for Creepshow with the help of Adrienne, Giancarlo, and Tobin was about as good as it gets for a horror fan from Pittsburgh. That makes sense because obviously Romero is also from Pittsburgh.
And he was one of his first experiences in Hollywood was on the set of Creepshow, Nick Otero. So he was there.
I think you mean Hollywood.
Hollywood.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. But you know, I will say, I can't spoil too much, but we were invited to the set of Creepshow.
Sure were.
The story won't run for a few months for now, but I saw a ton of sets and got to meet Nick Otero himself. And I'm feeling really confident.
Based on what you told me, the questions I had about this project, I am very excited.
Yeah.
I would say I'm even more excited than I am about it. Chapter 2 coming out. We'll get to that later.
You mentioned, we joke around about practical magic all the time, but let's just say they're using some practical magic here.
So. Ooh. Yeah. Nice callback.
I have a question here. So it says in you mentioned here the survivor type, which
was rumored.
It was rumored, yeah. Because when I was reporting on this, I was like, but they don't mention survivor type. And so I went back through the reports about that because we had mentioned it in the story as well. And I found that it was rumored from, I can't remember like how far it went back, but it was like, I dug back through the sources and it's like, I think it was a maybe at the time.
Well, there's no maybe about this news. Gray Matter joins an eclectic collection of other grisly stories by authors such as King's Son, Joe Hill, who we've talked about quite a bit.
I've read it's based on a short story by the Silvery Waters of Lake Champlain.
Take a moment. How is it?
It's good. It's very like, I don't know. It's not very pulpy at all. It's like kind of, I don't know. It's very thoughtful and like, it's good. Like, I'm very curious about them adapting it. It's about a sea monster that washes up on the shore of a small town, which is such a neat premise.
Yeah.
And it's about the kids and people like reacting to it. And it ends up being something not horribly like supernatural. It's very interesting.
Is it in 20th Century Ghosts or something? Or just
another... No, it was a Kindle single he published. Oh. Yeah.
Shout out Amazon Kindle. I love Kindle.
You do love Kindle.
Love Amazon. My corporate warlords. Sorry.
And Josh Tower. Mallerman's House of the Head.
That's the Bird Box author.
It's about a
It's about a bird in the head.
Oh boy. Joe Casey.
It is kind of crazy that they were able to get that author before Bird Box actually blew up. So that's you know.
Good alliteration on that comment, by the way.
Yeah.
Joe Casey and Keith Lansdale. King loves Joe Lansdale.
Yeah.
I'm assuming these are relatives.
They're trying to keep in the family.
Does The Companion. Christopher Buhlman does The Man in the Suitcase.
Man in a Suitcase. It's a police song.
Ah. Bruce Jones.
All right.
Does All
here.
Hallows Eve. All right. John Esposito does Night of the Paw and Rob Schraub, Bad Wolf Down. Exciting. A couple directors have also been announced. David Bruckner, who did The Ritual. Randall, you saw Ritual, right?
Yeah, I like Ritual.
Cool. Yeah, it's good. It's not bad.
Roxanne Benjamin, who did an entry in Southbound and an entry in XX, a couple
she
anthology
has a
horror
movie
movies.
Called, she had that movie that was at South By that we didn't get a chance to see.
Yeah, the Burial at Brighton Rock.
Burial at Brighton Rock, yeah. I wrote up the
Body at Brighton Rock, I think it was.
Yeah, it looks interesting. Yeah.
Rob Schraub, who did a couple episodes, I guess, of Fox is now canceled Ghosted. And Community.
And he did Parks and Rec, and he also did Monster House, which I love Monster House.
Oh, so it was a CGI movie, right?
That'd be a little comedy with this horror.
Kind of like a creep show entry.
Yeah.
Well, and guess who's back, though?
Yeah.
Guess who's back?
Back again. Creepshow assistant director and composer John Harrison's back.
The man himself.
The man, the myth, the legend, John Harrison. So
that's
anyway,
exciting.
I'm very excited about this. Mm-hmm. I'm still excited that this King Renaissance is, in addition to the Castle Rock news, we're bringing in high-class talent here. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Pre-cemetery? Stephen King's Pet Cemetery doesn't exactly leave the gates open for a sequel.
Wow.
Blah, blah, blah. So there's talk of a prequel. Producer Lorenzo Di Bonaventura seems to think so, as he told Losers Club member Daniel J. Caffrey.
Daniel J. Caffrey?
What is his name? Oh, W.
Walker.
He was named after D.W. Griffith.
Okay. So Di Bonaventura says, I generally don't start thinking about sequels until they're a success. Probably a good idea. I think if there's anything here, there's a prequel. I think if you look at the book, we didn't cover all the stuff that happens before the Creed family moves in. So maybe they could do a prequel about the housekeeper who kills herself.
Am I reading a Dino De Laurentiis quote? This is ridiculous.
So I think I'd be particularly interested in doing that.
He just all Dan asked really was just like, you know, if you could see a sequel to this, would you do it?
And that's fine.
You prompted him. I don't think this is like he actually is really thinking about it. I love how I'm like backtracking on literally our own source that we reported on in Consequence of Sound. But either way, it's. The idea of a prequel, I'm not like entirely against because I think there's a lot of cool stuff in it, but it's totally unnecessary because you have millions of fucking Stephen King books that you could actually adapt.
And I don't want it from this team, so that's me being a bitch.
I know.
Mike, you want to take this next one?
Paging Dr. Sleep. So, you know, we got a little gaffer in here. So last week, Warner Brothers teased footage of Dr. Sleep at CinemaCon, and we weren't there, but Slashfilm was, and they provided a description of the footage that that Warner Brothers showed. It's pretty exciting.
I know there's actual footage. I thought all they showed was the logo. This is going to be news to me.
Yeah, they had some write-ups that came out, so I didn't even know it either. But so according to Slashfilm, we got a glimpse behind the scenes with Ewan McGregor sporting a beard as the grown-up Danny, explaining that film directly addresses his character's traumatic stay at the Overlook Hotel. Specifically, how does he deal with that terrible experience from his childhood? Naturally, the presentation also noted that Stephen King is very involved in the production. All right, so here's the sneak peek. The sneak peek itself featured snippets of intriguing footage. A car driving through the woods in the beginning was clearly reminiscent of the opening sequence from Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. A group of people gathered around a campfire, possibly the villains of the film, a nomadic group of people with powerful
psychic abilities. I'll guarantee that they're the villains of the film.
Yeah, on those who can shine. We also see Danny touch hands with a young girl, possibly Abra Stone, a psychic kid played by Kylie Curran. Then there's a shot of a woman walking with a needle behind her neck or behind her back. Could this be Rose the Hat, Rebecca Ferguson, the main villain of the film? And then finally, the kicker. Danny standing in a filthy bathroom with red rum scratched into the mirror.
An adult Danny standing in front of the mirror with red rum in the mirror. Interesting.
Red rum.
You know, backwards, that spells, this is a sequel to 1980s Stanley.
There's no question about it in my mind.
No, I think the way that our bet is going to be resolved,
this is so,
that we've discussed is many times in the podcast because it's accurate. We'll know definitively whether this is a sequel to Stephen King's book, The Shining, or Stanley Kubrick's movie, The Shining. Since there's many, they'll probably incorporate elements of both. The definitive way that we will know who wins the bet, because Mike believes it'll be a sequel.
This is an anecdote that you've attributed to this bet that is just, it's shenanigans.
We can go back to the beginning of the pod when this was first brought up. Mike thinks it's a sequel to the movie. I think it's a sequel to the book, and we'll find out for sure. The definitive answer will be
I made a lot of jokes, some funny, during this episode, but I will say the preview I heard was that when they showed the Dr. Sleep logo, they also played the music from The Shining in the background.
That means nothing because
it doesn't mean nothing.
No, the definitive thing that will solve whether this is a sequel to the book or the movie, because they have cast someone as Dick Halloran.
Yes.
And they cast someone as that looks strikingly similar to Scatman Crothers, and also strikingly Shelley similar Duvall. To Shelley Duvall. So
if Dick Halloran is alive at the beginning of Doctor Sleep,
this is a bullshit anecdote.
No, this is the one thing that will be the definitive answer. Is then it is a sequel to the book because Dick Halloran does not die in the book.
This sounds like a sequel to the movie. If they're playing up this much, if they're using the music from the first movie.
Here's the thing. It'll probably incorporate elements of both.
That's all I was saying.
That's fine.
No,
saying that that was the sequel to the movie.
But no, you had a bet about it.
I had a bet that there was going to be a sequel to the movie incorporating elements of the thing.
Let me ask you another question. What if there's a picture?
How about this? What if there's a picture of Danny looking in his wallet at a picture and it's Jack Nicholson? Now, is it a sequel to the movie now?
No.
What?
The question is whether or not Dick Halloran is alive or dead at the beginning.
So they'll just choose to have Jack Nicholson for no reason as his father.
No, but I'm saying
it's the movie sequel. Both.
That's actually a good question, though.
We're talking about the story.
The only thing they got copyright for was an old picture of Jack Nicholson at a Lakers game at Courtside. Like, my dad used to take me to Lakers games.
Was it The Onion or the Clickhole who did the thing of him spilling his thing of chili on the court? And it's like him holding a Tupperware.
Anyway, so listen.
The bet is still on.
Hey, you know what? Dr. Sleep, I'm still very intrigued. As much as I don't like the book, let's see what they do with this book.
Hey, I'm all excited for it, but I'm even more excited for the bet.
Yeah, well, it's an addendum that Randall's added to this, so we'll see. But I feel like I'm already justified in this, not the FX show. So take the next story.
Should I read this one?
Yeah, let's move it a little quicker this time.
Hey, listen, if people interrupt, that's what's going to happen. You're going to interrupt me, monster?
I'm letting you talk.
We're only approaching the hour mark, so.
Well, good news. A little dairy for our diet. Hey, Slash Film also saw... Slash Film.
Hey, good news.
Good news, everybody. Slash Film also saw some footage of It Chapter 2.
Okay.
Let me tell you about it.
Oh, look how I'm like.
It wasn't a trailer. They say it was actually a scene that then gave way to a quick sizzle reel, as these things do. The scene in question is lifted directly from the book. It's when adult Bev, played by Jessica Chastain, returns home looking for her dad and instead encounters nice old Mrs. Kirsch. We all remember this from the book.
Oh, yeah.
And the miniseries. And then, of course, Mrs. Kirsch sadly informs Bev her father's dead, invites Bev into the house. Once inside, things start to get a little creepy.
You know what they say about dairy, says Mrs. Kirsch. No one who dies here never really dies.
What? Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Then she gives Beb a freaky scare.
Making up what Jessica Chastain says. What?
No. I was making sure that made sense, but it does. There's a weird... And then, of course, Pennywise... It's Pennywise.
Well, she does find the postcard that Ben gave her, so that's cool.
Ooh.
You know, so.
Sounds like a spoiler alert.
But there are also some other things.
There are.
Yeah.
The audience got a couple quick flashes from the film. You get the adult losers wandering through empty streets. We've seen some pictures of that already. Yeah. The younger losers club riding their bikes, so we will definitely get, I'm assuming, a lot of flashbacks in this movie. We get an adult Bev rising out of a lake of blood. Which I'm assuming would be like an enhanced version of the sink scene from when she was a kid.
Foreshadowed in her interview where she talked about the scene had more blood than anything.
Yeah.
Good old Bill Hader, Barry Zone, as the adult Richie beneath a giant statue of Paul Bunyan. Paul Bunyan's statue is going to be in this movie.
Boom.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Then we get the adults regrouping and inevitably going back to the sewers and a lot of red balloons being released into the sky. It, Chapter 2, September 6th.
Someone also described a shot of them standing in front of like a store window, and you could see the kids in the reflection, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's the ending of the book.
Oh, really? Is it?
Yeah. In the book, well, they just show the ending of the book in the song. Well,
spoiler.
Well, we're assuming everybody that's listening has read it or seen the movie, so...
That's true. Well,
that's not a spoiler. I'm just saying I'm surprised that they would talk about that.
Hey, it's a great marketing tool, so...
It was a great image in the book, so...
Yeah.
It hopefully comes out on September 6th.
Yeah. Hey, move it along.
Justo, you don't sound very excited about the sequel to It. You were being a fucking asshole.
I was being admittedly a little unfair. I think I said I'm looking forward to 25 movies coming out this year more than It Chapter 2. I was being a little unfair to myself. I could probably think about 35. because we haven't talked about the movies that are going to come out in late fall, like the Oscar picks and stuff like that. So.
Oscar pick.
Did you see The Last Laugh? That's a Chevy Chase movie.
Oh,
on Netflix.
I'm looking forward to watching that movie that came out last year. No, yeah. I'm kidding. I don't know. I mean, listen, I thought the first one was pretty good. And the adult section of It, the book, is weaker than the child section. I think we can all agree on that. That's all I'm saying. I'm not like I'm not expecting that much from this movie. I'm just not.
I'm the only thing worrying about me is old Dobberman.
Yeah, you got a great screenwriter here.
Well, we got one of the best.
The Nun.
The Nun's Own. Annabelle Come Home.
The Nun is one of the worst horror movies I've seen in my time of reviewing horror movies for this site. It was so boring and I hate using the description boring because it's such a subjective term, even more so than actual subjectivity that goes into a review, but just nothing happening and knowing that this is a prequel also and where this is going to go and just all the talent that was involved. I know it broke the box office and there wasn't one scare. Nothing scary.
None too.
We're going to do None too, and they're going to expand this bullshit Conjuring universe, but
more None.
Oof.
I need more Conjuring. I need more Conjuring in my horror.
I need None.
No.
Give me None.
Give me None. Bill Nunn?
I would rather see Bill Nunn, who was great and do the right thing.
He passed away.
He did. I would rather see
that. I would love a script from Bill Nunn for It Chapter 2.
Like a posthumous.
Like what if he had written it before he died? You know, I know Carrie had written it, the first draft of the first film, but
Bill Nunn did not like how Mike Hanlon was being treated. So they're like, Bill, give it a stab.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm excited still for this, but it is kind of weird and suspicious that they haven't released any details and even a teaser.
Normally I'd be excited about that because I hate when they release too much before the movie comes out. But I know how these rich New Line types work. These Warner Brothers execs work. They want to put as much out there as possible.
It's just
so
weird to me that they didn't attach it to
Ted Cemetery. People went nuts over the footage. I mean, I don't trust any of that bullshit from CinemaCon, but it's like people were like shrieking about that footage. So you'd think that they, I don't know, would feel confident putting it out.
I'll say we had a trailer for it in January of last year or February. It was right after we started the podcast.
Yeah.
And it's already April, so.
Well, we didn't actually get a full one until I think the MTV Movie Awards. So maybe that's what they're waiting to do again.
Every year I watch. So hopefully they'll do it again this year.
Well, it's weird though, because the marketing for this movie is definitely different than the marketing for the first one, because you're dealing with adults and not just kids as the lead. Like, it still makes sense to market it at something like the MTV Movie Awards, but it's just an entirely different movie, I hope. I hope there's a distinctive tone that's different.
This movie's going to make $500 million at the box office.
I'm sure it's going to make a fortune. But
you know what it's probably going to be a lot like? The Nun.
Ooh.
Mm.
You know what was my favorite part of The Nun?
The Nun Chapter 2.
When there was three things that were bothering me while watching that movie. One was the person behind me who had a paper bag that kept shuffling through. So that was already just a hellish experience.
Are you sure it wasn't a paper back of Stephen King's It?
They were reading it in anticipation. It was actually Dobberman himself.
Oh, taking notes.
Trying to figure out how to get all these characters together again.
Maybe there's room for a Nun.
God. Then I also had an allergic reaction, and then also had to sit through that movie. So
Like you were in a bad state of mind to be watching.
I was in a bad state of mind.
I think you give it another second chance. It's on HBO right now.
Yeah. Knowing me, I do actually give a lot of second chances, and I did try that, and I lasted 10 minutes before I turned it off again.
So since Pennywise is a shapeshifter...
None.
You know what he's turning into?
I hope so.
Screaming portrait. Anybody?
You know what would be great is if in that movie they you know when they go see the movies in the book.
Yeah.
He goes in and sees the nun, and then he comes out, and then the nun.
Great movie.
Yeah.
You know, I just realized Dobberman's rewrite of It Chapter 1 included the painting that freaks out Stan.
Mm-hmm.
And the nun is also a painting.
Ah, yeah. I think he's got a MO. As they say.
One TP, if you ask me.
I hope we get the bird in this one.
I hope we get the nun riding a bird.
It's too bad.
Like that's like...
anyway, It Chapter 2, September 6th.
It Chapter 2 arrives on September 6th.
Well, to let you know that if you're making plans after Labor Day, maybe the weekend after Labor Day, just know that It Chapter 2 hits theaters on September 6th.
My notes say it's the first Friday of September, which is September 6th
year. What do you say?
I think it's coming out on the World's Nun Day.
Which
it's,
is
it's,
the
it's Nun Appreciation Day is September 6th.
Oh my God.
Which is the day that they're releasing it.
Well, it's kind of nice because when Gary Dobrin found out he was going to be able to not only write and direct The Nun 2.
Yeah.
He found he was going to be able to write it Chapter 2 solo.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll do it on one condition.
Yeah.
September 6th.
That's really cool. I you know, it's not officially fall yet on September 6th. So it's pretty cool that it will be released while it's still bright and sunny outside on September 6th.
Mm. I'm not going to lie about this, but you know what date that The Nun came out in 2018?
What's that?
September 6th.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, but it's the same date as It Chapter 2, which is coming out on September 6th.
Well, there's if you check out numerology, this is fascinating. Okay, check this out. If you break down the number of September, which is 9.
Yeah.
The number 6, as of course, the day this is coming out.
Well, it's
and then 19 of the year. So if you flip the 9s, it's 666 if you take out the 1.
I was thinking about that because Stephen King, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but the number 19 is very important in his work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, September 6th, 6 is 9 upside, like if you turn it around. Mm. So, but you just get rid of the 1 and then you've got September 6th.
Well, that's 6, if you look at 9619, if you look at the middle numbers, numerology, once again, 6 plus 1 equals 7.
Plus 2.
7 losers. And of course, the 1 loser that's left behind is Mike Hanlon.
Oh, wow.
Ah, good point.
Well, if you go back 116 days from December 31st, you get to September 6th, which is when It Chapter 2 hits.
That's kind of wild, I think.
Yeah.
Did you guys know my birthday is on September 6th?
Is it really?
Yeah. It's also the day that It Chapter 2 comes out.
Mm. And It Chapter 2 is on Friday.
Is it? What day?
September 6th. King returns to Pet Sematary.
All right.
Well, if did anyone read this article?
Yeah,
it was great.
I wrote about
it. It was very good, yeah.
Very good interview. Fun. He reiterates some of the stuff he says about it in the intro of Pet Sematary,
mm-hmm.
about why he wanted to, why he chose not to publish it, well, initially, and he only did it to get out of his publishing deal with Doubleday. But, I think what was most striking about it was the fact that he still feels that way.
Yeah.
And he said if it wasn't for that deal, it would still be sitting, he said, like gathering dust in a drawer somewhere, which is wild.
It's crazy.
Like, I mean, that might be some bullshit, but I think he maybe would have come around on it eventually. I think he sort of maybe likes having that opinion of it, maybe because it's kind of been woven into his mythology. And
it's the same as the Shining take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but he does talk about like they ask him, they're like, well, how do you feel about people who like really love this book? Because the interviewer was like, I don't know, Steve, I really like it. And then he like made some kind of comment about like, I don't know. I can't remember what he said.
He says something, he does something like, well, you're wrong, Steve. I thought that was really funny.
I know. But like, I thought Stephen King's response, though, is basically just kind of like, you know, idiots like dumb shit. It was like something like, it was an old adage that basically boils down to that. And it just kind of made me laugh. But then he's like, no, you know, people like different stuff, whatever. People get different things out of stuff. But yeah, he just doesn't like how dark it is, which I think is interesting. And then also the remake just basically made it darker and more exploitive without the emotional resonance. So I can't imagine that he would have liked it. There was a story going around that he had pitched an alternate ending
that
was less dark.
Yeah.
And I can totally see that because the ending that's in the movie, I feel like Stephen King would hate it.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to read more with King, Anthony Bresnikan, who is apparently the King scholar over there at
he's always reporting the old news on EW.
Yeah. So he's talked to King about a multitude of different stories and it's good having those connections. So, and I'm not sour.
Oh, wow.
You're not, no, not at all. No, not at all.
I thought the ground was sour, but no, Mike Rothman over
sour.
Here.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But Chapter 2 is out on September 6th.
Ooh, wait.
Let's move on.
Well, my birthday is August 21st.
Oh, okay. All right.
We did Lisey's story, we more like up. Apple story. Mike, do you want to take this?
Actually, Justin, you take this because this is one of your favorite books.
I'll tell you, I am excited about this news.
Yeah.
Apple is staking a claim in the Stephen King Renaissance. J.J. Abrams and Bad Robot are turning King's 2006 best-selling novel, what I've talked about ad nauseum on this very podcast for years, literally, Lisey's story, into a limited series event for Apple TV+. Oscar winner Julianne Moore will star as the titular lead, with King returning to television and writing all 8 episodes.
It's pretty awesome. Wow. This just hit last night. It's less than 24 hours old at this
star
point.
Star power.
So. You know,
that's an incredible move to get Julianne Moore, and she's also executive producing it.
And they're like looking for high profile directors for this too. So
I think they'll get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all these streaming networks who are trying to get you know, as many shows as they can as for their launches, they're like just opening up their wallets right now and just getting the highest quality content that they can possibly get. I mean, if you think about what, you know, Disney Plus is doing with The Mandalorian and all the talent that they poured into that, they just announced today that like Billy Crystal and John Goodman are coming back for a regular series. I mean, it's fucking crazy how much content is being.
That's just My Giant too.
My Giant too. I can't wait.
Goodman's playing the Giant.
Baseball Love. It's a new Billy Crystal pilot. But I'm very excited this because for my money, I think Abrams has done a really well job at like adapting this stuff. I mean, I thought 11-22-63 was great. The first season, Castle Rock's great, which we talked about before. But so this is, I don't know, seems pretty promising.
And I like the fact, the key thing for me here is limited series. They're not going to try to stretch this out.
Yeah.
They said that about Under the Dome too.
Oh, did they say that was a limited series, though, for Under the Dome when it came out?
When it first started.
Well, let's be honest. This is a different story. This is on Apple TV. They got Julianne Moore. It's going to be 8 episodes and edit. Is this or is this not a sequel to The Shining, the movie?
Well, there is some a definitive way.
If Dick Halloran shows up at Lisey's story, then we'll know for sure.
Well, here's a question. Here's a real question.
I'm jazzed. Sorry.
Are they going to use a Ryan Adams song?
No, that does open up the book, unfortunately. Yeah. When the stars go blue.
Yeah.
You know, the good news is there's a lot of other songs out there that they can use.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't think we have to run into that problem.
I love King's reaction to this, though.
We're going to go back to Needful Tweets.
Yeah.
Drop the Needful Things thing.
Hold on. All right, here we go.
He's not a human being.
No! Don't you see what he's done?
Kill them all. Let God sort them out.
All right.
Love it. He said 20 hours ago.
I very excited about this. And so everyone on his comments were just like being like, I cannot wait for it. They just kept making fun of that, you know, grammatical thing.
That's wild. But you know what King is always excited for? All of his movies.
Yeah, that's true. Ones.
So this could suck.
True. Well, hey, he's writing it, though.
This could suck. This could suck. But you know what? This could also be very good.
I'm very optimistic.
Here's the thing, though. Like, we joke about that, you know, because of Maximum Overdrive and all, but for the most part, when he writes the screenplays, they're pretty good. I mean, I love 89's Pet Sematary, and I thought the screenplay for The Stand is not bad. I mean, I thought it's actually pretty strong. Like, the weakest parts of that movie are pretty much, like, what, the effects?
Yeah.
And in terms of original story, Storm of the Century is quite good. And that was three movies, essentially, right there. So,
yeah, I'm optimistic about King writing it. And this is material, like, he tends to lean on, like, you know, goofy ghosts sometimes, like wisecracking ghosts, but there aren't any.
Nothing in this one.
And so this is a very serious story that I feel like he'll take very seriously.
And this is his favorite book, I think he said, too.
Yeah.
So.
Did he write the Shining screenplay?
He did, the McGarris one, yeah.
Okay.
Well, he's done a lot since then. All right.
Okay, but and this is inspired by his accident from 99, too. So
there's definitely a lot of grief in this book and losing a loved one. I like the twist, though, because you could have easily just had it be him and losing a wife, but this is about a wife losing a husband. So anyway, I think it's a great book, and I can't believe they got Julianne Moore to do this, and I'm excited because obviously – they're going to be doing their best because this is, like you said, Mike, this is going to be launching Apple.
Yeah.
Essentially. So, or part of the flagship Apple shows. So looking forward to it.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
Let's close out the episode with a little debate.
You people are being stampeded. You know that? There are four witnesses to this supposed event. One I don't trust at all because he has a grudge against me. Of the remainder, two are hopelessly inebriated.
Not yet.
Working on it.
What about the fourth? I guess that makes me a flat-out liar.
I find that easier to believe than tentacles.
We're going
to
talk a little bit just about what Stephen King books we think should be adapted next, because our friend Brian Tallarico over at RogerEbert.com, was this a piece?
This is a piece he did for Vulture.
Oh, yeah. For Vulture. Yeah. And so, he posted 13, he talked about 13 different titles that would be cool to be adapted. And I guess, should we go through them and talk about
it? We can go through them, but I think we should also just like ask a broader question, like, what are we most excited for and what is left on the table? And I think these would be like a good springboard for like what's left on the table that we can kind of
My stock answer, because we've gotten questions like this in our Bag of Bones entries before, and my stock answer is always Lucy's story. And now it's gone.
And now it's gone.
And good riddance. I'm happy because I can't wait for that. But in this list alone, even if I didn't look at this list, I would still say The Long Walk, I think, has some great potential.
Long Walk, I think, has the most potential to be a really strong adaptation, and it's I just love the book, and I feel like I feel like you kind of have to fuck it up if you're like you. It's not. It doesn't seem that hard to fuck up.
No.
Like, if you kind of stick to the story. I don't know. And I feel like that's the... It also is totally intertwined with the kind of young adult entertainment that's really popular mm-hmm. right now. And it could easily be, you know, marketed as such. And so it just seems like a slam dunk.
The only thing that would fuck it up is if you get a director that doesn't know how to handle repetition. Because the book itself... deals so primarily in one location, even if they're moving, it's still on the road.
They're
and you're still just dealing
road.
With dialogue. So you really need to get someone like a Fincher or, you know, like a Jeremy Saulnier or something that can really kind of create that tension in small environments and whatnot.
It's creating like the claustrophobia and the wide open spaces that Saulnier does really good too.
I think. Yeah. So I don't know. Would you say like Lisi's is your favorite, is your most anticipated now?
In terms of what's coming up next?
Like officially God. On the docket.
Of what we know, of the information that we have, yes, because we don't know a lot about The Stand yet.
Yeah.
We don't know a lot about The Dark Tower yet. So I would say in terms of what you've told me about the who's running it, producing and writing and starring, Lisi's story is absolutely way up there for me right now.
Yeah, in terms of most anticipated, Long Walk, because I'm just into it being adapted. And we've talked about James Vanderbilt, I believe is his name. He's the one that's adapting it. We still don't know a lot about it, except for that he wrote it on spec. He's really passionate about it, which cool. He wrote Zodiac. He also wrote a lot of other shitty movies, but he wrote Zodiac. So
that could also change. We've learned, I mean, nothing's set in stone until they say,
I know,
action.
Yeah. Quiet on set. So that one. And then also, my boy, Tommy Knox,
you're excited for James Wan's?
Look,
well, we ran a great poll. If you go on Twitter, I think we had about 75 votes for this. Which is a lot
for
us.
For who should play guard?
Yeah, we had a listing. It made sense.
We put together a list of actors that we think would be really great people to play guard, the 40-something alcoholic poet in Tommyknockers and the upcoming James Wan movie. So we had our choices. We really narrowed it down. We talked about it for a while. We had Jason Momoa, Aquaman.
Yep.
Definitely.
He worked with James Wan in Aquaman.
Yeah, he worked with James Wan in Aquaman. He probably wants to work with him again. I think he could be really great. Sandra Bullock, Oscar winner.
Bird Box.
Yeah, she was in Bird Box, so she was kind of dipping her toe into genre.
She won Best Actress for The Blind Side.
Blind Side. So yeah, that's, you know, there's some Tommy connections there. Mm-hmm. And then... and then also Chadwick Boseman, Black Panther.
Yeah.
The guy's money in the bank. So.
Well, I feel like a lot of people were upset because it was like it was the DC versus Marvel once again. Is it going to be Momoa or is it going to be Boseman? Is it going to be Boseman or Marvel? You know, it's just everybody get over it. It's going to be one of those people.
So anyways, you might have seen the poll that we ran. Thank you guys for participating with it. And we'd love it if you just, you know, let us know. Like hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Instagram or Facebook and let us know who should play Gardner and Tommyknockers. Should it be Jason Momoa, Sandra Bullock or Chadwick Boseman?
Well, you'll be happy to know, this is exciting for the listeners, the poll has closed.
Okay.
83 votes.
Okay.
Coming in third, sorry DC, you lose again, Jason Momoa, 23% of the vote.
Okay.
Bummer. Well, he still has Dune, so he'll be good.
Yeah.
Number two, you mentioned her earlier, Sandra Bullock.
Oscar winner, second place. Wow.
Oscar winner, second place, Practical Magic's own, as Max said, Sandra Bullock, 36%.
Mr. Geniality.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go from the heights of Black Panther to the depths of alcoholism in the Tommyknockers, Chadwick Boseman with 41% of the vote.
Wow. He is officially cast.
So he's officially cast based on
this poll? We should have also told the listeners that we did reach out to Warner Brothers and James Wan, and it was whoever won this poll in 24 hours will be cast as guard.
Very exciting.
Chadwick Boseman will be playing guard in the Tommyknockers.
Very exciting. And
well, we'll keep you posted on if there's any negotiations that fall through in that regard, but things look to be very good right now.
They look to be very guard.
Yeah, very guard.
Do you think Jimmy Smits will get a cool cameo?
Yeah, no. he could play one of the aliens.
Oh, wow. He could like come out and he'd be like, you know, kind of like a wink, like I was in the miniseries.
Hey, he got passed, like, it's your turn now. You know, one of those, like a nice little passing of the torch.
And then all of a sudden he goes to his car and it just like blows up.
Well, how about you, Mike?
This is Miami Vice.
Miami Vice.
Also, Mike just referenced, for all of you out there, the Miami Vice pilot. Not the Miami Vice pilot. Anyway, that's
first 20 minutes of Miami Vice. You know, for the stuff that's actually on the table, I guess I'm really excited to see how they do The Stand. There's just so much promise there because I don't know. Based on how the Twilight Zone has been unfolding with, you know, CBS All Access, I do feel pretty promising about it. So for a modern facelift and given what they've been doing with prestige television at this point, it could be cool.
They're gonna pump a lot of money into it, so you don't have to worry about being some cheap affair by any means.
kind of spawns a question that I was thinking of is, now that we have so many properties of King that are given the time and their expansion on television, is that the preferred medium for all these Stephen
King
books?
I was just thinking that when we were talking about The Long Walk. I think The Long Walk should absolutely just be a movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
That should not be a limited series, mini series. That should just be a nice 90 minutes.
Could you imagine
movie?
A full season of The Long Walk have to keep walking the entire
episode? That would be a nightmare.
It'd be
worse for us than the people walking.
Yeah. What if it had like a 10-episode run like Cheers and all the kids are like at that point
seasons.
Like 30 years old or something? And
it ends with somebody knocking on the door and he goes, walk just ended.
Awful.
Nice.
That was a Cheers reference to all of you fans of Cheers.
Well, it comes out September 6th, and let's talk about this Vulture list.
Yeah.
And if we're excited about any of these potential adaptations.
How about this? Without getting into too much detail, to bounce off Mike's question, why don't we go down this list and say what it would work best as?
Oh, that's a cool idea.
I like that. So let's begin with the last one here, The Regulators. This excites me because I've only read it once when I was young, but I remain fascinated by this book, the concept of it. It feels like a cocaine book, even though he was sober. Mm-hmm. It is a crazy, crazy, wild novel. And it was a Bachman book, you know, it was his last Bachman book. And, I guess Blaze would be technically, but I'm a big fan of The Regulators, and I love the sort of weird gimmick concept he did with that in Desperation. It's such a strange exercise for King, and those are two books that I think are, or at least I remember them as being pretty underrated. I'm a big fan, so I would love to see The Regulators, but that to me is a movie, not a series.
Movie.
I've only read Desperation, which is not on this list, and which I believe would work best as a movie. So yeah, and they're mirror books essentially.
Yep.
They're, you know, like you said, they're released at the same time, so I'll go with your opinion on that.
Well, we've already covered The Wrong Walk, so I think...
The Wrong Walk.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with my fucking, talking today.
Here we go.
It's like my stutter's coming back. Maybe Pennywise is coming back.
Ah, stuttering Mike Rothman.
Yeah, so we don't need to talk about The Long Walk, but what about The Langoliers?
This is fascinating because I'm assuming, Brian's a big Stephen King fan, and I'm assuming he's read the novella. I have not read the novella. I've only seen the miniseries, which I hate.
Yeah.
Randall, but you've read it.
Good.
Yeah, I've read Langoliers, and I would have to reread it. I remember it was a little heady for me when I was young. I read it when I was really young, and I only read it one time. Yeah, so I would be interested in... I'm interested to reread it. I hate the movie. I think it's utter garbage.
Love hatred in this episode.
I will say that the Langoliers story, I remember being very compelling and very interesting, and I think that there's a lot of good in it, and I do think it could benefit from a good adaptation. And I just hope they bring Bronson Pinchot back.
What if it's just Bronson Pinchot and nobody else is on the plane?
Then it's a one-man show.
Let's do it, Bronso.
What if they use old footage from the miniseries and weld it with the new one?
And they just kind of do like...
But it still has the box screen because it was pan and scan.
They flip the frame so like his hair's parted the other way just to get like more reaction shots.
You know, the Langoliers miniseries, and when we get to it, I can maybe talk about this more. That movie to me is pure 90s.
Yes.
Oh, like, God, yeah.
Pure TV movie 90s.
Just the wardrobe.
Everything
but
about it.
The effects. Like Thursday matinee television in the 90s.
It is such, I'm actually really excited to revisit it just because it is such a weird, and it's such a strange story to adapt. Like, why did they choose that one? Yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah.
And I can see why it's on this list because to me it's a strange, interesting property that I think is sort of a bit, I wouldn't call it an outlier of King, but it's definitely a lot headier than, and it's like threat is more existential than it is. Physical and real and tangible. So interesting.
Well, you hated
interesting
that,
choice.
But do you love Tom Gordon?
I've only read The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon once and I didn't like it because I just thought it was slow and I wasn't invested.
It's slim too.
It's very slim.
I don't think that's really for us. And I don't mean like we don't like, I just think it's not for, I think it is actually his best attempt at like a youth, like a young adult novel in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think it could work well if they released it as a young adult.
Like a 10 episode season though?
No. Oh God, no. This would be like a nice partnership with the MLB network. And you have like a 90 minute movie, like Bob Costas introduces it.
Oh, I guess I didn't say about Langoliers. I would say that that's definitely a movie.
A movie, yeah. I think so. From what I know of the content.
Well, let's not forget this strange idea TV of movie. MLB like movie. With
hey,
Bob Costas, what?
The MLB Network. Bob Costas works there. I think they've done original movies. Let's do it. Girl of Tom Gordon.
Does it have to do with baseball?
And Tom Gordon is a famous baseball pitcher for the Red Sox.
I didn't know that. So there you go. And if it's not Manny Ramirez or David Ortiz,
the pop of the bat. No, this is Tom Gordon. He was a beloved Red Sox reliever. This is before they started winning World Series. Not so fun fact, he eventually went to the Cubs, my team, and was not very good. So I was the boy who did not love Tom Gordon.
Okay.
The boy who was angry at Tom Gordon in the ninth inning. That was me.
Well, if you're the boy who did not love Tom Gordon, are you the gingerbread boy?
No, but let's talk about the gingerbread girl.
I actually don't know this story.
I don't know the story
at
all.
Is this from like Everything's Eventual or something?
Yeah, I believe it's. I've never read
Everything's Eventual.
You know what? I have read Everything's Eventual. I should say.
It's a This is a.
You guys are morons.
This is Pontypool right now.
Pontypool. Like, good movie. Highly recommend.
Yeah. So he says Gingerbread Girl was okay. So as tales of survival and toxic masculinity continue to dominate the headlines, someone smart should have rushed this 2007 novella into production. The key here is finding the right actress to play Amy.
I do remember this. Mm-hmm. No, this is actually pretty good. It's in Just After Sunset.
It's a woman who becomes obsessed with running after the death of her baby daughter. As her marriage falls apart, she retreats to a family home in Florida. That's where King resides sometimes, where one of her neighbors happens to be a serial killer. When she falls into his trap, her recent training serves her well. This is one of those King works that doesn't deal with the supernatural falling more into survival subgenre. With echoes of Gerald's Game and even Misery, this could be a great two-hander with the right performers as Amy and Pickering, her attacker. It feels like a perfect fit for a Netflix original. I was thinking Mike Flanagan because this sounds Mike Flanagan.
This could make a good movie. I apologize. I just forgot the name, but I forgot the title because
Kate
it's not
Siegel
fancy.
There. Boom, you got it.
No joke.
Like, sounds a bit like Big Driver, which was not a good adaptation.
I like Baby Driver though.
I don't want to jump the gun here because we'll talk about that book in years to come. But Big Driver, probably my least favorite in that collection.
In Full Dark, No Stars. Yeah, I don't love it either.
I think that the Netflix series, is that what Tallarico said?
He's saying a Netflix original.
I could absolutely see that as a Netflix movie, yeah.
This next one he was saying, I think we all agree that The Jaunt would make like a really cool adaptation, but he was saying that this would be neat to, as a, almost like a nod to the 80s Twilight Zone, to be part of this new Twilight Zone and have like a Stephen King story being used for Jordan Peele's. I was thinking The Jaunt would be like a really cool
one. I think that it would be a good short story. I don't think it would be a good movie. This falls into our short story narrative.
I want a series.
Series of The Jaunt.
I want The Jaunt expanded universe.
22 episodes on ABC?
No, I'm thinking like 8 episodes that really kind of got into the creation of it. I think it could be a really cool sci-fi series.
Well, the whole thing is a look back on the creation of The Jaunt and everything else.
I think you could dig a little bit into it and toy a little bit. And obviously, I don't think we would want to know like what exists between the two sides of The Jaunt, but I think that it could be a really cool, creepy sci-fi series.
If you were to base it solely on the story that we have, I think it would work best as an episode of a creep show or Twilight Zone or something like
that. I'm more interested in it as an expanded sort of thing, but I would definitely watch the shorter version.
Absolutely.
This next one, I'm not interested at all.
Yeah, what is Graveyard Shift in here for?
Because
this would be a good, cheap movie that would make its money back.
Well, it already did that in the 80s.
It's going to make some more money, baby. You can never stop making money.
Just re-release it.
I think Brad Dourif's going
to
come back.
What if they did like 30th anniversary of Graveyard Shift coming back to theaters?
It's like a special, and they show it in theaters, but with a new introduction by Brad Dourif. He's like, hey, everybody, it's good to be here, and I'm here to talk about Graveyard Shift.
Hold your questions about the new Chucky series that Mancini's making.
Had a great time filming this with the boys back in 1987.
Mr. Dourif, when you were on the set of The X-Files, did you get to hang out with Jillian and Dave?
You know, Jillian was fantastic to work with, but I'll tell you something. She didn't match up to the levels of the wonderful Tim Oliphant on the set of Deadwood. He was a wonderful man and a treasure. John Hawks equally up to the task. We all miss Powers. We wish Powers was still with us, but he was there in spirit, I can tell you that.
Oh, man. Okay.
Thank you, Brad. Oh, thank you, Brad.
So Graveyard Shift, I don't think any of us are wanting it. I still actually kind of like the story. But, I mean, especially if you're going to do anything, just make it a movie.
Well, Brian admits that it'd be tough to pull off, but potentially amazing. And at any rate, we at least need to correct the error of that 1990 effort.
There you go.
But the thing is that the story itself is flawed because it's this, like, weird sort of turn that the character does because he's a drifter. But he automatically just, like, immediately goes to kill.
I think he just... You fix it.
Yeah.
It could be. It's fixable if you make like a dumb horror movie out of it, like a fun, dumb horror movie.
I mean, well, other than like Michael Jackson's Ben, when have like Rats been profitable?
Willard. The remake.
Love Crispin.
I don't know.
Let's talk Joyland.
Ratatouille.
Ratatouille, the terrifying Ratatouille. Yeah.
You know, Joyland.
I've read Joyland, and you know, I think this could actually work as like a Netflix series, mm-hmm. not 13 episodes, but like a 6-episode thing. Because you can actually expand upon this kid's summer at this mysterious...
Because it's a crime story set in the carnival.
That's the thing. Like,
it's Pennywise.
I think the best parts of this story have nothing to do with the mystery at hand. I think the best parts are just him. It's almost like an Adventureland type story of him just working at this amusement park.
Well, he's saying that this one feels like it could actually make for a robust setting for a streaming series.
Yeah.
There's an actual haunted house, potentially a murderer in the park, and a vibrant period backdrop. Maybe you've heard of a little show called Stranger Things. I have, Brian.
There you go.
It's one of my favorite shows. So think along those lines.
Brian and I are in agreement on this one.
Oh. So the next one, I don't know this one.
I read Mile 81 a long time ago. I get these mixed up around. Maybe you can help me out. There's the one where it's like a gas station, I think, and there's something going on with a car. Is that Mile 81?
No, that's...
Or is this like something to do with a cornfield?
The gas station is from a Buick.
I'm lost.
Or at least
I think I've read Mile 81, but maybe we should move on. I don't remember Mile 81.
Well, either way, he writes, the opening short story of King's Bazaar of Broken Dreams...
Okay, I've definitely read this then.
...was originally published as an e-novel in 2011. It's a wonderfully gory and grotesque piece of storytelling that would work perfectly on the screen, although it is hard to describe without making it sound goofy. The plot centers on a carnivorous station wagon.
Oh, wait. No, I know what this one is, and I do not like this story.
Okay.
Dan Caffrey and I have talked about this a lot. This is like, this falls into that old trope of that our favorite show, Family Guy, goes into where it's like, oh, it's a deadly car.
Yeah,
and
which he's done like multiple times.
Exactly.
So, no.
Does Dan like the story?
No. He doesn't like
it. Oh, speaking of deadly cars, we've got another one.
From a Buick 8, which is a book I rather enjoy, but I don't know. The book is so tied into the Dark Tower mythology in ways that I just don't know if it would... I would say I'm not even really sure it holds up on its own.
Mm.
Like, because the parts I was really into were Dark Tower based, because I liked how it sort of served as a vessel and it tied in the Lowmen and stuff like that. I mean, I don't think it needs all that to really function, but I don't know. It's another car story. It's not like the car is evil, but the car is sort of a vessel. And it's interesting in that regard, but it's a bit thin, but I still like it. I remember when we did our King Extended Universe, we had it in there.
Yeah.
And I wrote up the piece for that. So I don't know. I think it works better as part of a larger whole. But if they were going to make it, it's definitely a movie. So.
Well, it's Romero and Toby Hooper were attached to it at one point. So
really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think Romero's attached to every King property from like 1982 to his
And he
death.
Only did like what? Two?
Yeah, well, Creepshow, Dark Half,
and that's
it, right?
I guess I'm able to articulate it now, is like why I don't think it would work as a movie is because I think it would be really hard in a film to convey that the car itself is not evil. The car is a vessel.
Yeah.
And I feel like the movie would inevitably turn it the Christine route or Mile 81 route. Like it would, I feel like it would have to go there to make it because, you know, you need a monster and the car isn't a monster in Buick 81. It's sort of a mysterious object. It's a vessel. And so, yeah, so I don't know. I just don't know if that would work on screen. I like it as a book, but yeah, so. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Ah, wow. Hey,
wow. Oh, jeez. Calm down, Randall.
isn't that
back off.
Wasn't that a sign off for Weekend Update?
Colin Quinn,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
After we fumble his way through a bit.
Well, here's one I'm really excited for.
Oh, yeah, here we go, Mike.
Duma Key. I'm not
everything,
a big
everything
fan
I
of
hear
novel.
It's a movie, right? This would be a movie.
This would be a movie, yeah. And I'd probably enjoy it more as a movie. I just, there was something about the... He just takes a long time getting the story going.
But you didn't finish it, did you?
I got about 75% and I just could not.
That's crazy.
I know.
I think it really gets cooking.
Eventually, but then at that point, I was already reading other books about him. So
I'm a Duma Key fan. I don't love it. I think it would work as a series.
Oh, really?
There's a lot of character development that goes on. Like the main character.
Like a limited series?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see that. Definitely not. Right, more than
You don't want five episodes, 22 episodes, five seasons?
No. Okay. I do think that it's an interesting character study. I think it's a cool setting for a piece. And I don't know. The story itself is flawed. It's a very strange kind of thing, but there's a lot of beats that I think it could hit that it could be a really cool character study with a bit of supernatural.
Well, it's another one of those stories that was definitely inspired by his accident because it deals all about...
It's about pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's good, though. I mean, I'm a Duma Key fan.
So. I don't know. And I'm from Florida. And I just couldn't... And the cover is gorgeous, too. And I remember my girlfriend at the time got it for me as a Christmas gift, and she would just be like, "Did you finish the book?" And I was just like, "Yeah."
It's like, no. I didn't finish the book, but this relationship's over.
Yeah, it was something like that. Over text message, too. No, I'm joking.
Oh, my God. You suck, too.
Yeah, no, we're all good people here at the Losers Club.
Sure.
Next book.
The Man in the Black Suit.
Ah, this is a short story.
Yep, and this was in The New Yorker, which is my favorite magazine.
And it was also congratulations.
Intellectual.
And it was also it's in one of his collections. This story kind of reminds me of Gwendy's Button Box. I'm not saying the plot's the same, but it's a kid. I think he thinks he's met the devil or ran to the devil and is trying to evade him for years and years. I think it's a tough one because it works as a short story. He's telling the story.
Yeah.
I think it's a movie.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, it would be a movie. I don't see
I mean, it's a short story. So
yeah. Story should stay short, mm-hmm. as short as possible.
Totally.
Not much to say about it.
Well, the last one is a big one that I think everyone here is pretty familiar with, right?
Did you guys hear that they're making a porn parody out of Gwendy's Button Box?
Oh, what's it called?
Yeah, it's going to be called Gwendy's Butt Box.
Wow. You could just said Gwendy's Button Box.
You probably could, actually.
Butt Box.
Like butt. Okay.
Oh.
The number one adaptation.
Speaking of the children's tale,
yeah.
We talked about this a lot, too. The Eyes of the Dragon. I think this would work best as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Even though it takes place over years, I think it still works best as a nice, taut, 105-minute movie that's including the credits.
I think Tim Burton could do it.
And I think definitely.
I think if Tim Burton, who's not listening right now, and even if he was, he's very rich. I don't think he ever has to work again.
No.
I'm done.
This is should definitely be marketed at teenagers.
Yeah.
Or preteens.
And no Tim Burton is my number one thing on the list.
You don't want that Dumbo touch?
I don't want the Burton touch anymore.
I've heard two people love Dumbo. Phil Casares,
that's it.
Who I trust, and Matt Mellis. So
this movie will not be good. I'm calling it now. He's made, two good movies in the 21st century? And they both had the word big in the title?
I will say Miss Peregrine's is actually not bad. I enjoyed it.
What about Dark Shadows or
awful.
Sweeney Todd or
awful?
Can we go on?
Big Dumbo,
Big Fish. Do you like? Hey, you gave Big Eyes a B.
That was the other Big Eyes. Yeah,
so the Bigs. Okay.
But guess what? Big Eyes look nothing like these other.
I know.
Post production gray filtered
nonsense. Yeah.
Uninspired.
Well, anyway,
what happened, Tim?
So Eyes of the Dragon directed by Tim Burton.
So we're gonna get Tim Burton to direct this movie. Obviously,
I hope so. I hope we get Aja Butterfield or whatever his name is.
Ah,
as the dragon. Asa.
Ava Green can play Flag.
Oh, that would be cool. Maybe she could play, Queen Roland or something like that.
Queen Roland. Rolanda.
Or maybe she could play, I don't know any of the characters. I've never read the book, so.
Well, I'll say this about Eyes of the Dragon. There are not, there's a couple female characters, but they're not given a lot of time.
Oh.
I'll say that much.
Yikes.
Well, sign me up.
For what, the female characters or for Tim Burton?
I'll take them all.
All right.
I'm making this thing happen.
All right, well, that's not on this list. Like, what are ones that you actually would want at this point?
Oh, my God.
I mean, I really want another Salem's Lot. Like, I want a really good movie of Salem's Lot.
I want a new Return to Salem's Lot.
Oh, really?
Rest in peace, Larry Cohen.
I
think I would like to see a limited series of Salem's Lot.
Oh, okay.
Because there's enough there. There's a lot of characters.
Actually,
there.
Yeah, I think a limited series. It needs to be a limited series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you'd be good. A nice slow burn there.
Want a Song of Susanna.
Well, I got some good news for you.
On its own.
Season 10 on Amazon. You're going to get it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Anything else?
I think that's it.
Cool. This was a fun episode, y'all. Thanks for putting up with our bullshit. There was a lot of bullshit this episode.
We've been waiting to do this for a while, though. So
please still give us 5 stars. yeah, but,
I think for the the It Chapter 2 release date jokes alone.
Oh, yeah.
That's a five-star, five-noser.
I wonder how
five
many noser. People are exactly at that point going to be dropping off the episode. So
if you're still with us, we appreciate it. Exactly. We appreciate you. You put up with our shit. The thing is, though, we haven't been in a room together for a little bit, or at least I haven't with y'all. Yeah,
court mandated.
We need a fun episode. We need to get it out a little bit.
Yeah.
So thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back soon. Dark Half is our next book that is on the horizon, and we've got an interview with
Christopher Young.
Yeah, so famous composer. You might know him from Hellraiser and the Dark Half film.
Recently at Pet Sematary.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I didn't realize he did Pet
Sematary. And A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge.
Ah, the one about repressed homosexuality.
Yes, you said it. we discussed it back in February on Halloweenies, a Freddy Krueger podcast.
Check it out.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much, guys. We'll see you soon. So long
days
and pleasant nights. I got some hot friends.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.